And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket.
Dave, the question for this week is, does it help or does it hurt? And what I'm referring to are a number of things, but the first thing is the attempt, not the attempt, but the action by the Justice Department, the government generally, to get the nuclear files out of Trump's hands that he was clutching in his basement.
Yeah.
I don't exactly understand why he wanted nuclear files in his basement, but apparently that's what he'd wanted.
Well, we're not sure exactly. That's what the report said, that they were nuclear, but there certainly were classified files and top secret.
He didn't deny it. He's not quick to. He's not shy. If it weren't true, he'd have said nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, he claimed that it, you know, they were planting stuff, and then it turned out that he was watching it the whole time. That he had.
Yeah.
Closed circuit cameras on the whole thing. He knows they didn't, and it's all recorded. Nothing was planted.
You mean Trump lied? I can't believe it.
I know. It's hard to believe.
Believe. But you know, my immediate thought on this was that the loser wasn't, at least in the short run, the loser wasn't Donald Trump. The loser was Ron DeSantis. And the loser was Mike Pence and maybe Mike Pompeo, those pretenders to the throne that want to run for president in 2024, but it didn't have the gumption to directly challenge Donald Trump. And now they have to come to his aid, to come to his side on this, along with the rest of the Republican establishment. So it certainly, I think, has helped in the short run. But, of course, in the longer run, as more and more details come out and we find out about these things, whether it has a good effect on Trump's political ambitions for 2024 or not remains to be seen. Depending on what gets revealed, it could be become more negative, although it's certainly what we're dealing with here, because it is a cult that so many of his followers have doubled and tripled down and refuse, you know, this cognitive dissonance and making all these excuses for him and coming up with all these thoughts and ideas. You know, as Rudy Giuliani said, they have theories but no evidence, so they come up with all this stuff. But it's become dangerous also. We had that incident later in the week with the Cincinnati FBI office where this fool went out and got so hyped up about it that he was going to take out FBI agents and wound up losing his own life. We've already seen the fools who believed Donald Trump on January 6th that went up and crashed through into the Capitol. Now we're winding up in jail. But I don't think it dissuades any of them from, you know, spouting out their venom towards government or towards reasonableness or what have you.
It is interesting, and it certainly points out that really what's at heart here is racism, that the people who organize themselves and campaign vociferously against the slogan defund the police are now themselves demanding to defund the FBI.
Right. Because I don't think they see them as the police. I think they see them as, or they've been told to see them as a corrupt institution that stops them from expressing their true beliefs and their vision of America. You know, one of the prime proponents of this, of course, is Steve Bannon, who wants to tear down all the administrative state And this is...
But why shouldn't the police be part of that? I mean, why do the police get exempted by these right-wingers, the local police? But the security police, who turned against them for the moment, they don't get exempted.
It's the nature of their hypocrisy.
Yeah, it's because, that's exactly right. It's because the local police are part and parcel of their movement. They know it. They recognize them. They see them at the meetings.
Yeah, and we saw them on January 6th, a lot of local police.
Exactly.
A lot of former military.
In the mob.
Yeah. Now, let me go back a little ways. Right at the beginning of the Obama administration, a report that had been commissioned under his predecessor, George W. Bush, came out and said the biggest threat to America were domestic terrorists, if you remember that.
Right-wing terrorists.
Right-wing terrorists. And the Republican Party was bonkers. And they forced Homeland Secretary Janet Napolitano to withdraw that report. It was
like,
a big mistake.
It was like within weeks. She did it within weeks.
Within weeks. That was a test. That was a test of how intimidating they could be. And she should have stood up to them and said, folks, we didn't make this report. This was made by a Republican. And two, if you don't like it, do something about the terrorists. Don't do something about the people that are warning you about them. She didn't do that. And then all the way through, we've seen this and we continue to see this. Christopher Wray has repeatedly said this to congressional.
Christopher Wray, appointed by Trump.
By Trump, has said that we have this domestic terrorist problem. And, again, he gets pushed back from the likes of Rand Paul, who's a libertarian, doesn't want government in any form or whatever. So you have this ongoing trend, and it has just metastasized. Absolutely metastasized in the Trump Twitterverse or whatever you want to call it out there, that information silo, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. I don't think we've seen anywhere near the end of this thing. That's a big danger. There's a book out, by the way, and I can't remember who wrote it, but. Much like my thinking, the author attributes the beginning of this real breakdown to Newt Gingrich and his, destroy your enemy type of thing. No holds barred attacks on your political enemies, and and now we're sowing.
Well, I'm not sure that's right. I mean, look at McCarthyism. Yeah. Wasn't that the same thing? He purged the State Department. He created a whole class of people whom he called communists who had nothing whatsoever to do with the Communist Party. They were just liberals, but they were enemies of the Republican Party.
Yeah. It didn't quite get to be that broad-based, try to take on the army.
Well, that's right. He ran afoul of Eisenhower. So
he ran afoul of Eisenhower, George Marshall's reputation, of course, this is Roy Cohn was involved in that, who is Trump's mentor. So that thread lived on. It was like these diseases that come and kill a lot of people or make a lot of destruction. And then fade, but they never quite go away. It's like the shingles. You get chicken pox, and then it goes underground, and at some point later on in life, it reemerges in a more virulent form.
In the case of American history, though, at the time of McCarthy, there was, at that time, and this was his problem, and this was his target, there was a big left wing, and it had millions of adherents, and his task was to get rid of it. He didn't quite succeed. 50 years later, it's gone. It's a lot easier to now attack liberals for being left-wingers, even though they're not left-wingers, because the left-wingers have been wiped out. That's the difference.
It's one of the differences. I mean, there are still a few and far between, but they're...
But there's not that kind of movement that there was.
No. No, it certainly isn't. And this thing is still playing havoc. With our politics and with our country.
That's right.
It's a very a dangerous thing. You know, on a parallel, and I want to get back to the January 6th commission because that's tied into it. Maybe we should talk about that right now. The commission is part of this exposing of this conspiracy or whatever you want to talk about, and the Republicans have been out there threatening. You know, they said when we get power, when we win the Congress back in November, you better hire your lawyers. We're coming after you. We're going to do the same thing that you've done to us. But exactly what are they going to find? They're going to find the same evidence. It's sort of like that the last Benghazi hearing. They spent 11 hours, and then they asked Jim Jordan and others, what did you find out that was new? And they said, nothing. There is nothing there comparable, but they want to make you think that there's something.
It doesn't have to be anything. They'll say there's something.
Yeah. And that also was Trump's M.O. in terms of he understood the power of McCarthyism and the PR. You don't need the proof. You just need the headline.
Exactly.
That's what he would remember. That got him impeached the first time with Ukraine. Remember, he said, you don't have to investigate Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. You just have to say you are.
Right.
It got him impeached the second time when he tried to pull the coup on the Department of Justice, where he tried to install Jeffrey Clark so Jeffrey Clark could send that letter out.
Which Jeffrey Clark was perfectly willing to do.
Yeah, he composed the letter and what have you. And again, it wasn't that they were going to follow up on it. They were just going to keep spouting out about what the letter said.
Right.
Creating something out of nothing. Except they were creating nothing out of nothing, but it made it look like something. And,
This technique is called the big lie. It was originated by Goebbels.
Yes.
The Nazi propaganda chief. They copied it. They're proud to use it. For the same ends, by the way. To foist fascism on us.
Neo-fascism. Yeah, it's neo-fascism. That's why I follow this lady, Ruth Ben-Ghiat. She explains every single move that they make. And she understands it. The question is, how do you parry it and whatever. Now this week we had a couple of more details in Pennsylvania around that January 6th. They went ahead and they took Scott Perry's phone. Scott Perry is that congressman from down around, was it Lancaster, that area, who was Jeffrey Clark's fairy godfather. You know, he's the guy that suggested him and what have you.
He introduced him to Trump.
To Trump. And the bigger surprise was that the FBI went in and issued a bunch of subpoenas to a number of Republican state legislators, state senators and state representatives. But nobody is saying who. We don't know exactly who they are. We know who some of them aren't, who have come out and said, it's not me. Jake Corman said that, but we don't know exactly who and what it's related to, although one can surmise it's related to this investigation of the phony electors in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, as long as we're talking about Pennsylvania and state senators and what have you, we have Doug Mastriano, who's also following the playbook of making accusations but not having anything substantive behind them except the mere accusations. This week he was supposed to testify before the January 6th committee. We know he was there. We also know that, or it doesn't appear that he went into the Capitol. But, you know, he got to the committee and he said, folks, I'm insisting on making my own rules. I'm insisting that you can't tape this. You can't selectively edit this stuff out, and I can get it, and I can tape it. I can use it for my purposes. And the committee says, you know, this is not your state committee. This is our committee. We set the rules. And Mastriano said, thank you, then I'm going to leave. And he left without doing anything substantive. That's very Trump-like in what he was doing. And, you know, playing the victim, he'll go out there and saying they're trying to distort and what have you.
Why did they let him get away with it?
Well, we don't know if he's gotten away with it. Again, they can go after him and ask that he be held in contempt for not, you know, he can show up, but he still has to answer. And his answer is
he could take the fifth. That's an answer.
That's an answer. But to tell people, I'm not going to testify further, I think is contemptible in terms of what can be done. But then you run into the dilemma again, which is kind of our theme. Does it help or hurt him? It certainly helps him with his base, who think that everybody is out to get them, that the society is changing to their detriment. He makes it personal. But will it hurt him in the longer run? Can he be charged and have what happened to Steve Bannon happen to him, be convicted? We'll have to see. But, you know, speaking, taking the fifth, we had Donald Trump this week. He went in. He didn't refuse to testify. He just took the Fifth Amendment 440 times, becoming another one of those people that he once talked about as being criminal if you take the Fifth Amendment. He joins his son, Eric. He joined his son, He joined Roger Stone. He joined John Eastman. He joined Jeffrey Clark. He joined Michael Flynn. All of these people are associated with Trump or Trump organizations. And as an attorney, I will tell you that it is their very right to do that. I will defend their right to do that. That's constitutional. It's legal.
By the way, it has an honorable history.
It has an honorable history.
The Fifth Amendment exists to prevent torture.
We're one of the few countries that has that right.
That's right, and it is not an admission. You're not saying I don't want to incriminate myself. You say that, you're stupid. What the Fifth Amendment's language is, I am not required to testify against myself. That's the language.
Yeah, and against self-incrimination.
Yeah,
in a criminal case, the prosecution isn't even allowed to bring up the fact that they take the Fifth Amendment.
Right.
Right,
because it's not a statement either way.
Right. Yeah. Steve Bannon.
And it is one of the triumphs of the secular state. It is one of the distinguishing characteristics between the religious state, the state run by religious law, which in Western tradition was characterized by the Inquisition, by burning people at the stake, by torture. Dunking them. That's exactly witch hunts. And secular emancipation, secular enlightenment, which said this is inhuman, we're not having it. People like Mastriani, people like Trump, who are defending the religious state, want to go back to the religious state and do it on the, they defend themselves through the repudiation of the religious state.
Yeah. It's who we are, but it's the way it's being weaponized. The people taking the fifth, make it out to be that they're
guilty of
they're
something.
Victims.
Yeah,
The
But of course, you can misuse it. And Trump is misusing it.
Sure, sure. Now, in civil proceedings, like the one that's being investigated in New York, you can mention if someone takes the Fifth. It becomes what we call in law a rebuttable presumption. We can say that you can presume that if they testified that what they would say would be against their interest, because it's civil, it doesn't create a criminal penalty. And they would have to show that, no, there's a better reason to take the Fifth that doesn't show that it would be harmful to their case. That's a big difference between the civil and the criminal law. Again, I go back to Steve Bannon. That's the mistake he made. He should have gone in and taken the Fifth, but he didn't want to do that. He thought he could actually, bluff his way through.
It may not matter because, as you point out, it with his base, it may help him.
Yeah.
And their theory is not to win anybody over. Their theory is to mobilize the people they've already won over. And that's it.
Yeah, to get 100% of them out.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the man.
That's what Trump wanted to do in the last election, and he did it.
Yes. He got 14 or 15 million more people out
than he thought he would get.
We talked about extensively leading up to that. He got, 61 million the first time, and he was trying to get to 70 million, and he actually got to 74.
Yeah. Which is why he can't believe he lost.
Right. Exactly. What he was looking at, though, is only his own side. He didn't realize that the other side was maximizing their...
Well, he's an asshole strategist. That's a different point. But the thing is, what he wanted to do, he overfulfilled.
Yeah.
And that's why it helps. It doesn't hurt him. It helps him.
It helps him. Now, going into the elections this year and 2024, the Democrats have had a somewhat of a different strategy in saying we're the ones that are getting things done. And
they didn't get anything done until last week.
Well, actually, they got a lot done, but they haven't been able to capitalize on that and promote it the way a Donald Trump would promote it. Don't forget. And now all of a sudden the media is coming around and looking at Joe Biden and saying, hey, for a guy who's supposed to be old and senile, and we've been talking about that or whether he should run, there's been a heck of a lot done. And you start going through the list. First thing was he got, hundreds of millions of people vaccinated. He then got the infrastructure bill through. He got the postal reform bill through that they've been working on for years. He got this bill on chip manufacturing, bringing it back to the United States so we're not dependent on that in the supply line. He got this veterans bill through, which was a big mistake on the Republicans' part in terms of opposing it for aid to people who had been exposed to fire pits and such. And then he was able to bring back from the dead the Build Back Better bill, albeit in a very scaled down form, but still there's a lot in that, calling it the Inflation Reduction Act. By the way, he's also reduced the federal deficit in doing this. He has gotten more people employed. He's created more jobs have been created under him than anybody, I think, in 80 years or maybe ever. The unemployment rate is way down. He's gotten more federal judges through, albeit no Supreme Court, one Supreme Court judge, but he's gotten more federal judges through than anybody at this stage of their presidency. They're looking around. There's also a heck of a lot there. And he's not finished. He said, we're going to go back and try and do things. And the Republicans keep shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, can you imagine that they opposed almost to a man or a woman the provision to cap prices on insulin? How many millions of diabetics and their families are around the country that are scrambling to pay for medication?
35 million.
Yeah.
10% of the population.
Yeah, and opposing the veterans bill because they got mad at something. These kind of things, looking around.
But can the Democrats, does it help or does it hurt?
Well, we're going to find out. You know, locally we have a congressman, Matt Cartwright, who's been at the center of a lot of these things. Some of his provisions are there. He's bringing money into his district on infrastructure. His committee.
So the guy should be a runaway hero, right?
He should be. And,
is he?
And this week,
is he?
Well, this week, his opponent, Jim Bognut, released a poll, an internal poll, saying that Bognut was actually leading by a point. 46
so there you
to 45.
Go. There you go.
Now, we'll have to see whether or not that's.
But the thing is, he did all of this, right?
Yeah.
Is there a local organization called the Democratic Party that is mobilizing on the basis of that? That's making him a hero? That is his, you know, the people standing behind him and his organizing people? No, he doesn't organize it, there's nobody to do it. There is no such party.
Well, I got something this week from the Lackawanna County Federation of Democratic Women, asking for contributions and talking about his plans or his assistance in bringing rail service to New York back to this area. You know, it's only a simple flyer and it's a fundraising thing, but who knows? It's something. It's something, but it's only a small. It's far less than what the Democratic Party should or could be doing.
That's the point.
I'll say that.
That's the point. It doesn't help. It doesn't hurt, but it doesn't help because there's nobody to mobilize behind it.
And the Republicans have their own organizations. You know, we find out this week, Mastriano, he's being supported by this Commonwealth Leaders Fund.
Which Jeffrey Yaz all over again.
Jeffrey Yaz. Now, Yaz didn't support him in the primary. Yaz supported Bill McSwain, I believe.
Yeah, but Yaz is obviously an organization guy. He's the candidate. Yeah. He's getting the money.
He's getting the money, and we'll have to see how they try to parry that. Meanwhile, you know, coming up this week, I'm going to actually be at a fundraising gathering here in Clark Summit for John Fetterman. He's back on the campaign trail. He had a big one Friday night in Erie.
1,300 people.
Yeah. He said, it's funny you could get this many people in my basement. I mean, Mehmet Oz, that's his whole attack, that he's in the basement. Remember they tried that with Joe Biden? Biden's hiding in his basement. Well,
yeah.
Pretty effective. And this week we're also going to see what's going to happen with Liz Cheney in her primary on Tuesday. It doesn't look good for her. I think she has maybe a 10 or 20% chance at best to win that primary, but she has a chance. You never know.
Yeah, but in Liz Cheney's case, she's elevated herself.
Yes.
I think she's transcended Wyoming politics.
Yeah, and, despite what we despise about her general political postures.
Yeah, which is everything but one thing.
One thing, but the one thing is maybe the most important thing, that she's pro-democracy
and
anti-autocracy. So,
Well, that's it for this week.
It's
a good way to end it. Pro-democracy, anti-autocracy.
Yeah.
That helps.
Quit while you're ahead, right?
Quit while you're ahead. All right, this coming week will be an interesting week because more is going to unfold with what the FBI took out of Trump's basement. And how the Republicans react to that. So,
stay tuned.
Stay tuned. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.